we're commanded to serve our families and our communities to the best of our abilities. And, you know, we should take our vocational responsibilities in these areas very seriously. And I think that involves making sure that we create conditions in America that continue to allow religious freedom and allow our Lutheran faith to continue to thrive, and that we can continue to evangelize.
Mark Hemingway talking about his joint presentation with his wife Molly at this year's virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
The fact of the matter is that on those particular issues of religious liberty and preserving our faith from the onslaught of bad cultural and political ideas, things have never been more dire, and it's more important than ever.
You can watch journalists Mark and Molly Hemingway making the case for Christian political engagement at the 2020 virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case conference. The premier conference for Christian laity. It's Friday, July 24th and Saturday, July 25th. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org.
I'm afraid that at this point, on subjects of politics, especially if it has anything to do with morality, culture, and religion, and Donald Trump, I'm afraid you're just going to have to do careful reading.
These Puritans, and I mean that not in the sense of Christian Puritans, but in ideological Puritans, they keep trying to purify themselves to the point where they outdo one another, and in the end, they have to eat one another. They literally are killing each other.
The culture is going to turn around, it seems, more and more to go after classical Christians. And a time of soft totalitarianism, as Rod Dreher calls it, or just outright persecution.
Lutherans could say, hold on, hold your horses here. Look back at the fathers. Here, listen to what they said. And that thus they were able to show that they were not teaching something novel, not teaching something heretical.
On-demand listeners of Issues Etc. love hearing sound theology while walking the dog.
Well, 2020 has been kind of the political version of that drinking game, Never Have I Ever. A lot of things that people thought would never happen have happened. A lot of things that people thought they would never have to do, they are doing, sometimes willingly, sometimes against their will. And presidential elections and campaigns are no exception. Never have we ever seen a campaign like this, where we don't know how we're going to be voting in November. The polls are telling us very strongly that President Trump is losing ground, but we've seen those kind of polls before when he was elected in 2016. There is just no way of predicting the future, even a day ahead. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Friday afternoon, July the 10th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be getting an update on the November elections. Mark Hemingway of Real Clear Investigations will be our guest. We'll spend some time with Emily Jashinsky, culture editor for The Federalist, talking about that open letter on cancel culture from liberal elites that is set to appear in Harper's Magazine. Joy Pullman joins us, author of the book The Education Invasion, to discuss two issues: federal funding for schools that failed to open, and public skepticism of science post-COVID. Jocelyn Benson is alongside. She's head teacher for Wittenberg Academy. We'll discuss e-learning and homeschooling. And then, since it's Friday, we will play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We will play four sound bites for you in their entirety. After you have heard them, you give us a call, 1-877-623-MY-IE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet @issuesetc, or go to our Facebook fan page and vote in advance for Soundbite of the Week, facebook.com/issuesetc. Joining us for an update on the November elections, Mark Hemingway, senior writer for Real Clear Investigations. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be back. You really captured why I listened to Issues Etc. in the opening segment. It's the combination of a sound theology and drinking games that keeps bringing me back to...
Well, I understand you can do some drinking games, because I understand you are a bachelor temporarily with Molly and the kids out of town. So you can put that into practice, play a little game of Never Have I Ever with yourself. What did you make of the kind of pre-criticism and then post-criticism of President Trump's Mount Rushmore speech?
I don't know what to say. I mean, that speech was a real, you know, for those of us that have been casting a critical eye toward the media for some time, that speech was a real watershed moment, in that The media reaction was really astonishing and telling. The media reaction was completely unmoored from any of the contents of the speech. There was a Washington Post piece in particular that, you know, just said that Trump's speech was, you know, essentially all about racism, which was, you know, ridiculous. A U.S. Senator, Tammy Duckworth of Wisconsin, went on television and said that Trump spent all of his time talking about, quote, dead traitors, when in fact, you know, he explicitly mentioned several American, you know, heroes, you know, to praise them, everyone from, you know, Jackie Robinson to the Tuskegee Airmen to Muhammad Ali. I mean, it could not have been more divorced from reality. I mean, and also the message itself about cancel culture and other things like that, I think is something that is actually kind of a pressing concern to a lot of people, because, you know, a lot of the debates about cancel culture and free speech are being played out, you know, among sort of high-level pundits and intellectuals in this country. But the fact of the matter is that these attitudes are creeping into education institutions and, you know, corporate boardrooms and corporate HR departments. And, you know, there have been all kinds of, you know, worrying stories about, you know, there was like a Hispanic worker, you know, blue collar worker, like 2 weeks ago, they got fired for making the OK symbol, which supposedly is racist now. This kind of thing, this woke liberal indoctrination, is going to have, you know, serious consequences for American life. And I think Trump was right to highlight it. You know, he's an imperfect messenger for that message, but it doesn't change the fact that the media started with this idea that Trump was going to, you know, give a speech about, you know, defending racism, and then they wrote it up as if Trump defended racism, when I would encourage everyone to go out and read the actual text of the speech and make the judgment for themselves, because I can't think of another event in American life where I would say that the media were just, the sort of mainstream corporate media were just completely and utterly unreliable and simply didn't tell the truth about what happened.
Before we can have elections, we ordinarily have the two parties hold their conventions. Will there be party conventions?
Well, it seems like the Republican convention is bound and determined to happen because Republicans want it to happen. Supposedly they're making all sorts of, you know, COVID-related precautions. They're going to test everyone at a barrier for, you know, temperature and other things like that. But they seem determined to have it. From what I've heard so far, the Democratic convention in Milwaukee is going to be mostly virtual, and that will be that. I don't know whether the Republicans will benefit from having more of a physical presence at their convention or not. Conventions are one of these things that, in the era of the internet and stuff like that, have kind of outlived their usefulness, particularly because we don't have really delegates making big decisions like we used to in the party machinery. But it does serve a function in terms of getting people excited. It does encourage a lot of networking among party activists. And so it's possible that Democrats, you know, could be hurt a little by not, you know, having that kind of enthusiasm that's, you know, sort of created by the convention. But, you know, I doubt it. I mean, it'll be covered. Both conventions will probably be covered by the media more or less like they would, you know, if the conventions were going off full of people.
We also ordinarily have face-to-face debates between the two candidates. Will there be presidential debates?
Well, that's interesting. I wouldn't have thought about that, except that Thomas Friedman, a very well-known best-selling author and New York Times columnist, recently wrote a column where he demanded that Biden only agree to debate for Trump under two conditions. One is that Trump releases taxes, and two is that the networks do real-time fact-checking on the debate and everything Trump says. Now, the tax thing, I don't really care, neither here nor there. The Supreme Court's weighed in on it, you know, whatever. But it's pretty clear at this point in time, you know, especially following the discussion we just had about the Mount Rushmore speech, that, you know, I certainly wouldn't, you know, want to double down on Trump's reputation for veracity. You know, certainly Trump doesn't always, you know, tell things in such a way that, you know, you can reliably trust what he says. I mean, you know, I think we all know that. But at the same time, the way the media have gone about screaming that he's a liar and a racist every time he opens his mouth, that kind of condition on a debate is just an absolute non-starter. There have also been problems with, you know, media moderating debates as it is. You might recall in 2012 where a moderator stepped all over Mitt Romney to correct him in a really profoundly overweening and embarrassing way, and it turned out she was entirely wrong to do so on the factual merits. The point, though, is I think that people are worried about Biden's mental competency in his advanced years. You know, clearly he can't do any sort of appearance without tripping over his words, and they are worried that the debates are going to cause problems for Biden's image in that regard, and they're already kind of laying the groundwork to try and get out of them. People have been speculating that was the case for a while, and Thomas Friedman just, he's about as good a barometer for the conventional wisdom as there is, and he just confirmed that people are worried about it.
How does President Trump's polling compare to 4 years ago in early July of 2016?
Well, obviously, he's in a worse position according to the polling. You know, I don't think there's any getting around that. But, you know, this has been a really weird, unusual year, both, you know, politically and just in terms of, you know, current events. So getting a read on what the country is thinking is very difficult at this point in time. I mean, make no mistake, I mean, I think that Trump is the definite underdog if you're looking at the polling, and, you know, there's no getting around that. But a lot can happen between now and November, and I wouldn't take the polling as gospel, certainly. I think a lot of the polling we've been seeing oversamples Democrats in their polls. And, you know, further, as we learned in 2016, the polls were very unreliable in really significant ways in terms of, you know, which direction they went. They can say their polling was accurate because it was within a certain margin of error, but when a lot of these states are going to come down to, you know, Trump's, you know, electoral college margin of victory was something like 80,000 votes in a handful of states in the upper Midwest. Getting the polling wrong in the direction by, you know, a few thousand votes here and there decides the election. So you can't really, you know, trust the polls, I would say, at this point in time. But I would keep in mind that they are not good for Trump, but it's not the end-all be-all.
We have seen a spike in violent crime in some of our major cities over the last several months. Is law and order going to be a major issue in this campaign?
I mean, it better be. I mean, if Trump it doesn't make it an issue, it's got to be political malpractice. I mean, we've seen a 16% increase in murder in the top 25 urban areas in this country. I mean, I think 75 people were shot and like 15 people died in Chicago last weekend. And there have been several recent weekends in Chicago where the number of shootings have topped 100. But that's Chicago, and we all know Chicago is a uniquely bad violence problem, but New York City, which is, you know, supposed to be America's poster child for urban renewal, there were 64 people shot and 10 people died last weekend in New York. So, I mean, this is a serious problem, and, you know, I don't know how many of our listeners are, you know, live near or in major urban areas, but, you know, I was just in downtown D.C. today, and, I mean, it's astonishing. I mean, there are, you know, it's pretty clear that a lot of these big city mayors in the wake of these protests and riots have decided to just sort of let loose control of the cities. I mean, there are tents and homeless people wandering around parts of Washington, D.C., where I was today, that's just shocking to see. I mean, you know, close to the Capitol, places that are nominally have, you know, very tight security and things like that. It's just really going to get out of control. And if Trump is smart, he needs to tie Joe Biden to a lot of these Democratic mayors. You know, Jenny Durkin in Seattle, who called the autonomous zone, you know, compared it to the summer of love when, and, you know, quite predictably, you know, two people ended up dying because there was, you know, no police in the area. So if Trump's smart, he's got to, you know, tie Joe Biden to these Democratic urban mayors that are, you know, letting go of law and order and you know, making an issue because it's getting people killed and it is destroying urban areas.
Mark Hemingway is our guest. We're getting an update on the November elections. He's senior writer for Real Clear Investigations. We'll talk about voter turnout next.
There are so many issues throughout all levels of government that smart Christians need to view it as a way to care for our neighbor by making good decisions.
Molly Hemingway talking about her joint presentation with her husband, Mark, at the 2020 Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The federal government has gotten much more involved in family formation or family destruction, abortion, other issues. And there are so many ways in which it's important for us to think about how we can defend the weak and vulnerable among us by making good decisions.
You can watch journalists Molly and Mark Hemingway making the case for Christian political engagement at this year's virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, July 24th and Saturday, July 25th. The $135 registration fee includes the ability to watch a live stream and a recording. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
Our life together as the church after COVID-19 will bring new challenges. For example, we might be tempted to skip the regular gathering of God's people because we're more comfortable streaming it on Facebook instead. May it not be. Join the Reverend Dr. Mark Wood as he explores this theme in his article for the June-July issue of the Lutheran Witness titled, Gathering Again, It Will Not Be the Same. Subscribe at cph.org/witness, The Lutheran Witness, Interpreting the Contemporary World from a Lutheran Perspective, cph.org/witness.
We're getting an update on the November elections on this Friday, July the 10th. Mark Hemingway of Real Clear Investigations is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Mark, if turnout is low because of COVID, which candidate benefits the most from a suppressed voter turnout?
Well, as a general rule, Republicans tend to benefit from low voter turnout. Democratic elections success involves, you know, registering a lot of people that might be on the margins of voting. You know, a lot of young people are less inclined to vote, and they tend to vote more Democratic, for instance. You know, and certainly, you know, poor people in cities and things like that, you know, people that are more itinerant, they tend to vote Democratic, but they also tend not to be the people that have, you know, current or accurate voter registrations. And so there's, you know, Democrats benefit greatly from having, you know, big voter registration drives, and because of COVID and other things like that, they haven't been able to do that. On top of the fact that if there is a silver lining in the polling for Trump, it's that it does show that there's an enthusiasm gap, which is to say, even though Biden is doing better in the polls, Trump voters are clearly more enthusiastic about showing up to vote for Trump, generally by significant margins. So low voter registration, you know, for Democrats, you know, much lower than probably than any recent comparable election, combined with, you know, a lack of enthusiasm for Joe Biden, could be a big problem for Democrats heading into November. But, you know, we'll see. You got to balance out the lack of enthusiasm for Joe Biden with a certain degree of anti-Trump fervor, which did seem to play a role in the 2018 election.
If some states implement remote voting by mail or however it's going to work, which candidate benefits there?
Well, that's actually a complicated question. I mean, like I said, you know, remote voting or mail-in voting usually comes part and parcel with, you know, a lot of other things to make voting easier and more relaxed. And in theory, that should benefit Democrats along the lines of what I was just saying. However, mail-in voting is also more reliably done by older voters, which tend to skew Republican. So, you know, maybe I'm sure Republicans are already thinking about this problem and how to deal with it. And there is an open question of electioneering in both the legal and illegal sense with mail-in voting. On one hand, you have a situation here where Democrats are putting a lot more effort into ballot harvesting, which is either legal or quasi-legal in some states, but it's illegal in other states. Ballot harvesting is when a third party, you know, goes around picking up people's ballots and delivers them to the ballot box. And obviously it's illegal in a lot of places because anytime you introduce a third party, you know, responsible for delivering someone's vote, there's potential for fraud. There's also another issue, which is to say that in the massive increase in mail-in voting we might see in November, as, you know, several states expand voting by mail, could lead to an increase in fraud. I mean, everybody agrees that the vast majority of election fraud is associated with mail-in ballots. I mean, that's just a given. Everybody knows that. And we've seen some signs. There was an election recently in Paterson, New Jersey, municipal election in May, where one out of every five vote in the city's election appears to be fraudulent, and the New Jersey Attorney General has brought charges against four different men for voter fraud, including the current vice president of the city council. And across New Jersey in May, they had elections in 31 different municipalities, and 10% of all ballots got rejected. So we need to keep an eye out on what's going to happen with this massive increase in mail-in voting, which will be unlike anything we've ever seen before.
Let's talk a little bit about down ballot, in particular, key Senate races to watch. What are they?
There are four big key Senate races you should be probably paying attention to. One is Maine, where Susan Collins is kind of in the fight of her life. The state has been becoming more liberal, and even though Susan Collins is a very centrist, very liberal Republican, she got party activists in the Democratic Party just, you know, out for her head because she defended Brett Kavanaugh on principle, and quite rightly to my mind, but that certainly put a target on her back, and Democratic activists have been flooding that race with money. I think the sexual assault allegations against Biden helped her a little bit, but it's definitely a close race. The other is North Carolina, Senator Tom Tillis. There's not a lot to be said other than North Carolina is just, you know, it's a very purple state. And obviously there's been a lot of money flowing to Tillis's candidate. Colorado, again, another very purple state where Senator Cory Gardner has done a very good job of sort of threading the needles Republican and focusing on state issues. But, you know, again, there's a lot of Democratic energy and, you know, money in the state. And then finally, Arizona, where Senator Martha McSally was appointed to the Senate seat there by the Republican governor after John McCain died. And she is facing a challenge from Mark Kelly, who is a former astronaut and is the husband of Gabby Giffords, who's been very active in Democratic circles because of his activism on gun control and some other things. And, you know, being a former astronaut and in general, he's a good candidate. And McSally is not known for being a great candidate. Like I said, she was appointed to the seat and she'd previously run for Senate, as I recall, and not done very well. So it's just a kind of a case of a, you know, even though Arizona is also a purple state, you know, it's just a case of, you know, a bad candidate versus, you know, a good candidate running against her, even though she has some advantages as an incumbent.
What is the likelihood of the Democrats winning the Senate?
I would still say Republicans have a slight edge in terms of keeping control of the Senate because they have a handful of seats to spare, and there is an almost certain pickup opportunity for Republicans in Alabama where, you know, Doug Jones is elected Senate as a Democrat in the wake of the scandal involving Roy Jones dating teenage girls. So, you know, Alabama is obviously a state that's not, you know, inclined to vote Democratic these days. So that will offset whatever gains Democrats have in, say, those four states. But there's always the possibility, particularly because Trump is a polarizing figure and this is a crazy year in terms of political events and things like that, if there's any kind of Democratic wave election, that Democrats will just go ahead and pick up a whole, you know, number of seats and take control of the Senate. So, you know, Republican senators need to keep an eye on Trump's fortunes. I would say that they rise and fall with Trump's success in November. And to be perfectly honest, I think that there's a lot of Republican senators who are not fond of Trump and see the best path forward for them as Biden being elected, but Republicans keeping control of the Senate until they can regroup and come up with a better candidate. And I think that that's, whatever your issues with Trump are, I think as an electoral strategy, that's pretty foolhardy. You need to have a party standard bearer, and everybody, you know, needs to fall in line behind that electorally to succeed.
Do Republicans have a chance to regain the House?
It's very unlikely, but having said that, you know, this is the craziest year in my 44 years traveling around the sun. So, you know, I wouldn't rule out anything. I mean, we could see, you know, more rioting and some, you know, black swan event that comes out, you know, to add on top of our COVID misery and things like that that could improve Trump's fortunes. You know, who knows? But everything I've said to be predictive so far, you know, makes me wonder, you know, given how crazy this year has been.
Hip-hop star Kanye West has thrown his hat into the ring. He was ordinarily seen in a Make America Great hat, but he's decided he wants to run for president. How seriously should people take that?
I mean, so far, I haven't seen a lot of energy behind Kanye's announcement other than, you know, him saying he's going to do it. He's already passed the filing deadlines in a lot of, you know, major states, so he wouldn't appear on the ballot there. If he did mount any kind of serious run, I mean, it's a question of what that would do. I mean, I would think it would be a net benefit for Trump, because it might siphon some black and younger voters that would normally be inclined to vote for a Democrat to vote for, you know, Kanye. But on the other hand, you know, Kanye has conservative and Christian vibes that he puts off. I mean, he was recently seen criticizing Planned Parenthood, in fact. So who knows? He might steal from Republicans. But either way, at this point in time, unless he puts forth a lot bigger effort than simply being a celebrity who announcing his intentions, I don't put a lot of stock in him affecting things.
So what should we be watching for in the coming months leading up to November that will give us a better indication, maybe even than the polls, of how things are going to go for the incumbent president in the elections?
That's a really tough question. I don't really know. I mean, I think the thing is people have to remember about the election in 2016, where in the last couple of months, the Trump campaign really zeroed in, and so did Trump himself. You know, Trump tends to, his natural inclination is to be all over the place in terms of what he's tweeting and what he's not tweeting. But in that last couple of months, Trump sort of focused in like a laser, and so did his campaign in terms of, you know, started stripping the bark off of Hillary. If we see that kind of like narrowing focus on Biden and less concern about, you know, attacking the media and other things like that, I think that would be a good sign that the Trump campaign, you know, knows what it's doing and has a plan, and that, you know, would have a huge impact on increasing Trump's fortunes. The other thing I would simply just keep an eye out on is both candidates are old men. If any of them would get sick or injured, you know, certainly, like I said, Biden is already putting off senile airs in terms of the way he speaks and stuff. I mean, Biden has been hiding in his basement for a good reason. I mean, he's about one more serious blunder or health problem away from backing out of this race or, you know, making the race much more competitive for Trump.
Mark Hemingway is senior writer for Real Clear Investigations. Mark and his wife, Molly, will be responding to viewers' questions and comments at the 2020 Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, July 24th and Saturday, July 25th. Learn more and register online at issuesetc.org or just give us a call, 618-223-8385. The 2020 Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, 2 weeks from today. Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Emily Jashinsky of The Federalist will join us on the other side of the break. We're going to talk about this open letter that has appeared on Harper Magazine's website and will appear in the letter section of their October issue. It is signed by a lot of liberal elites, and it is questioning cancel culture.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll begin our wrap-up of Romans. Christ, our exemplar. Christ, the hope of Jews and Gentiles, the offering of the Gentiles, the visit to Rome and Spain, and the long goodbye. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand at thewordendures.org and on the Lutheran Public Radio app.
Concordia University Chicago is committed to keeping college affordable for all, and especially for LCMS Lutherans. We have scholarships available specifically for students who are LCMS members. This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia Chicago, asking you to encourage your student to check out Concordia Chicago at cuchicago.edu. And if you are interested in supporting these scholarships, please find us online at foundation@cuchicago.edu.
Please know that you are welcome at Ascension Lutheran Church in Niles.
We believe that every word of Holy Scripture is true.
Jesus died and rose again for your salvation.
We pray for each other. It's a priority. We help each other in times of need.
We help each other grow in faith.
We encourage one another.
We truly love one another.
We have room for you and those you love, Ascension Lutheran Church.
Niles and Annoy.
Timeless truth that prepares scholars to serve their neighbor in all of life through their various vocations. This is what scholars receive at Wittenberg Academy. If you are looking for a solidly Lutheran online education for your child, consider Wittenberg Academy, where doctrine is sound, academics are rigorous, and relationships are genuine. We offer full-time, part-time, and diploma track options to meet your child's Lutheran education needs. We partner with brick-and-mortar schools and homeschools. You can find out more at wittenbergacademy.org.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by becoming an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor. Bethlehem Lutheran, Sylvan Grove, Kansas. Faith Lutheran Church and Preschool, Marinette, Wisconsin. Holy Cross Lutheran, Albany, Oregon. Lutheran Church of Our Redeemer, Peekskill, New York. Mount Zion Lutheran, Castle Rock, Colorado. Prince of Peace Lutheran, San Diego, California. St. Athanasius Lutheran, Fairfax, Virginia. St. Paul Lutheran, Austin, Texas. Trinity Lutheran, Arapahoe, Nebraska. And Zion Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. Find out how your confessional Lutheran church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Support, Donate, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes an Issues Etc. sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal.